Hi. Good to see so many people here. It was a tough speech to write. I was very angry most of the time and frightened. And I tried to do my policy analysis, and I will do my policy analysis since that's one of the tasks I was given. But I wanted to start by saying this was a very tough speech. It's very frightening times for all of us in different ways. And those feelings will be in the room, and they will hopefully be channeled by what we learn together. So thank you for being here, and I'll proceed. There is a saying, the poor will be with us always. There are policies, however, that reduce poverty, and there are policies that promote poverty. I argue that the proposed BC Employment and Assistance Act will drastically increase poverty, hunger, exclusion, and homelessness. It will also increase the poverty of ill will, injustice, and mean-spiritedness. I'll skip the 5 pages of history. It was all recent history, but we'll go right to the goals. And I'll be speaking a bit to the goals of the proposed law. Then I'll move to the major 8 changes. Then to the categories of assistance. And I may not get further than that, and I'll be called for my time. I do have some comments on consequences and longitudinal studies of what's happened in the States, but I may not be able to get to that. I do want to go to the goals first. All recent changes in the BC laws and procedures, including this one, have one goal, and that is to open BC for business. That means business of for-profit health, social, forestry, mining, technology businesses. Consequently, our current government intends to efficiently reduce government operating costs of any policies that are promoted to the well-being of its citizens. And it will do so, it will increase these efficiencies by offloading responsibilities and costs to private individuals, non-profit organizations, for-profit businesses, and local governments. So like the BC benefits, and there are those in the room who know this law better than anyone, and I know some have actually identified if people have questions, so I will not go into BC benefits, that's our current, our job is to look at the future, but like BC benefits, the proposed law has several specific goals. To, quote, assist people into employment, and two, income assistance to those truly in need. Note, the assistance is for only those truly in need, or most in need. It's a major change from past laws that said in need. So the intent here, I would argue, is it's a clue that there is to be fewer people on welfare, only determined by officials to those most needy, most desperate, and most deserving. That's a goal for truly in need. These two goals of employment and assistance are reflected in the law's name. Not BC benefits, not the original guaranteed income and assistance. It's now employment and assistance. These goals may not be compatible, and they could even be contradictory. And nor are they equally important. The goal of employment, I argue, is far more important than the goal of providing assistance. For instance, in the performance standards proposed by the Ministry of Human Resources, and for those public servants and the profit companies who will be paid to implement this law, there is more clarity and far more insistence on meeting standards that move people from welfare to paid work. Whether it's short-term jobs, bad jobs, whether they're even working already many hours, but it's certain kinds of jobs. So the standards are about moving people from welfare to work. There's far more attention to that than performance standards about assisting people in need, even if they're truly in need. Targets are already mentioned on the website, stating that the more people who contact the ministry for assistance, who are, I love this, are diverted to employment, the more successful workers will be and the ministry will be. So diversion to employment is a key goal here. Unlike the BC benefits, however, this proposed law does not speak at all about the larger unemployment or childcare context or society's obligations to, and here I quote the current law, not the proposed law, the current law, BC benefits says, whereas preserving a social safety net that is responsive to the changing societal and economic circumstances is important. All of that is removed from what we understand to be in the proposed law. So the context. So I argue that even though the observable overt goals are employment and assistance, with one being more important than the other, I think we really have to look for the invisible goals. The invisible or covert goals to increase individualization and privatization of the responsibility of people for their own well-being. And this applies to both workers and to applicants. They will be expected to decrease their use of welfare and to increase paid employment, regardless of the context or their obligations. If unsuccessful at finding paid work or decreasing requests for welfare or diverting people away, both the financial aid workers and the applicants will be blamed. Blamed as individuals, they will be denounced as not performing well, not deserving, not up to snuff, and less worthy. I propose that the new law will be looking at ways to blame individual workers and individual applicants, blame them for the problems, and avoid societal responsibility. I move now to the 8 major changes. I have to really move this around to make sure I get them all. Okay, 1, obviously the change in name and its emphasis on employment more than assistance. 2, cuts and benefits for all applicants and cuts to workers. This means monetary benefits are cut sometimes up to 40%, and Susan Dempsey will be speaking more on this. There are significant cuts in time, that the workers will have much less time to spend with people doing what they feel is important. 3, elimination, not just cuts, elimination of many monetary and service benefits. One of the strangest eliminations, given the intent of employment, is that for every dollar that is earned in paid employment, your welfare will be cut by another dollar, 100% tax rate. So elimination of all incentives around paid employment. I don't understand this one at all. 4, a serious restriction in eligibility, such as Ben Marks has already mentioned, the drastic reduction in eligibility of parents who are working and taking care of children. Up to now, if your child, your youngest is 7 years, you are still fully eligible. In the proposed law, your youngest, when she or he is 3 years old, you're expected to be fully employable, taking whatever job needs to be, no matter what the child care arrangements are. 5, besides these cuts, besides the complete elimination and abolition of services, restriction and eligibility, 5, there'll be an increase in the policing. The policing of the daily behaviors of the workers as well as the applicants. Look, for instance, at the quarterly management reports on the workers' performance measures, and then the monthly monitoring of these new employment and assistance agreements that every applicant must now sign. And if they do not sign, and if they do not perform as an applicant, they're no longer eligible. 6, not only monitoring increases, but there will be more punishments. And I am calling them punishments because they are punishments for the workers as well as the applicants. When they don't meet the performance goals, and when they do not provide the correct information, and when they are not seen to be meeting targets. 7, there will be a significant reduction in access to fair negotiating procedures regarding eligibility and benefits. I can't quite figure out the website on this one, because the words keep changing, but the appeal processes will be changing. Mr. Lazard has actually served on the Income Assistance Appeal Board in the past. That board's gone. That will be gone. We don't know, though, if there's only internal tribunals or there will also be another variation of an appeal board. But so far, there's going to be a significant reduction in the negotiating procedures for welfare. And finally, the ministry aims, and the final change is reduction in the operating budget by 30% over 3 years. So they will. That is a proposed goal and a change. 30% reduction in the operation budget. Staff will be reduced by 15%, but what is completely hidden, just some hints here and there, that there will be capital increases in technology costs, payment to private for-profit contractors. It's very hard to figure it out. There's only one line that I could find that the cost of capital went up. I have 2 minutes left. So I can only move then to, those are the 8 major changes. I'd like to spend them just, you can't hear? This is not working. This is not working. Let me scream. Okay, there are going to be changes in the benefits. So the eligibility and entitlements, just get briefly into that. All the five laws currently on the books will be gone. There'll be one new law, a comprehensive consolidated law. And in there, there will be four categories. First, which is totally invisible, but it's called the no eligibility, no support category, which is the biggest. Second, there'll be drastic short-term disaster relief. Third, temporary assistance. And fourth, continuous assistance. Those are the four new categories. The first one, though, I will speak to more because it's the biggest category and it's the most invisible. And just count me, there were about eight areas, but I just need to list them. Students, you're all cut off. You're not eligible, only for loans. No eligibility anymore for any student pursuing secondary education. Immigrants and refugees are no longer eligible, particularly for drastic. Young people, if you're 19, forget it. You have to live 2 years independently somehow before you're eligible. The biggest, most major and chilling effect, a change of category of biggest and largest ineligible category are if you've been on assistance for 2 years or more, that is it. We're the first province, the only province in Canada to say there's no way, no matter what your circumstances, you are not eligible for anything. If you've been on assistance for 2 years, no matter what your circumstances are, unless you can prove long-term medical concerns or your parenting, other than that, you are cut off. The consequences clearly in the States and some of the Ontario data now, very recent consequences, clearly show a major increase in evictions, major increase in giving up children for adoption and abandoning children, and a major increase in poverty. And I should stop because of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, March. Questions? Yes, please.
My name is Robert Arnold. I'm the first vice president of the Federated Anti-Poverty Group of BC. And that was great, March. There are two things that I wanted to bring to your attention. The appeal system, from the information I'm getting, we won't say where I'm getting it, will we? Is that each region of the province, the ministry has defined different regions in the province, is going to get a board of some sort appointed by the minister, and when an appeal comes up, if there is any room left in the act or regulation for an appeal, because they're taking away all of the words made in the legislation, when an appeal comes up, there will be three people selected from this board, and they will hear the appeal. This, in effect, says that the client no longer can choose their own nominee on the tribunal, and in effect says that there is no more justice. Justice will not be seen to be done. The other thing I wanted to say was the four categories. There is no eligibility and no support category. Includes one more. The person who is found guilty of fraud in this province, welfare fraud, will be cut off and not eligible again for the rest of their life. My question, of course, is what's this person going to do? I'm scared of the answer, frankly. When businessmen are convicted of fraud, they're punished. They go to jail. But when they pay their debt to society, they can get credit again. We're punishing poor people in this province more than we are more serious criminals with fraud with bigger numbers involved. So those are just the two things I wanted to say.
Thank you.
That was the category I couldn't remember, and it's a very important one. Kimberly Rogers, as some of you know, is the first woman who, in Ontario, convicted of welfare fraud and who died.
We were talking about her.
Okay, right. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because those are the categories that need to be talked about in the appeal, and Hester will, I think, develop it. Kimberly Rogers, and this is, talks about what can we do. Kimberly Rogers was a student who did get welfare and student loans and therefore was convicted of fraud. She lost her right to all welfare. She was in Sudbury. All welfare, had nothing, absolutely nothing. She appealed and received $460 a month while she waited. That left her $18 a month after paying her rent, $18 a month for all her costs. She was pregnant, and she was also put on house arrest for 3 months. It was very hot, and she died. They are holding an inquest officially. What the citizens of Sudbury have done is hold a citizens' investigation into how everybody did their job, and she died. It's one of the, you know, we have to monitor very carefully what's going to happen, change as much as we can in the next little while the legislation is being drafted and perhaps changing some of this. But one of they certainly are starting also a campaign a year after her death called Justice for Dignity, and it may go across Canada, not only in honor of Kimberly Rogers, but all the people who, on one hand, do their job and can't help, and all those who are fighting to live a dignified life and can't. Thanks very much.